G'day, I am Mordechai Becher.
And I'm Yehoshua Karsh.
And welcome to Two Rabbis and a Podcast. And it is almost Pesach. I'm hoping that you'll see this before Pesach. But it's relevant even if it would be after Pesach. Because what we're talking about is something which is on our minds currently. Bread. Bread.
It certainly is on my mind.
Absolutely. We are getting rid of bread. We are buying unleavened bread. We have an entire meal where we're focused on the unleavened bread, matzah, etc. I mean, bread, very, very central. And it's like Judaism has this really interesting fixation on bread. You know, you could eat a 15-course Chinese buffet meal. And at the end of that, you would say a blessing called Borei Nefoshos, which takes about 10 seconds. You have half a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and you are sitting there with a siddur for 10 minutes saying grace after meals. It's extraordinary. You go to a wedding, and the shmorg has got the fantastic-looking sushi, and obviously you gorge yourself in the sushi to the extent that the sushi chefs behind just can't keep up with you. They're making it as fast as they can, right? But you know what? And after all of that, you can be stuffed to the gullet. It's unbelievable. And you only say, Borei Nefoshot Rabot, a very small bracha, which Rashi, in fact, says, when the Gemara says that you say after certain foods, V'lo klum, nothing, Rashi says that refers to Borei Nefoshos. Russian broth.
Relatively nothing.
It's that, yeah, relatively. I mean, seriously, yeah. You have a slice of bread and you're sitting there. Are there three people who had bread here? And some people have wine. And then you are praying for 10 minutes. It's like, it bothers me, but it's a little interesting.
The only bracha, maybe one of two, the only bracha that is overtly mentioned in the Torah.
Yes.
Is Birkas HaMazon.
You shall eat and be satiated and you shall bless God.
Of all the brachos.
Yeah.
You know my thing. I have this thing, which is about the fly.
The fly?
Imagine you were at a convention of winged animals and birds, winged everything and birds. And you've got the eagle. You've got the peregrine hawk. You've got the
condor,
the stork, the condor. You have all these magnificent, magnificent birds. And then in flies in the fly. And they all stare and wonder, how did he get the name? Out of all of us, they had a choice of all of us. And they looked at him and they said, oh, he's fly. So it's a similar thing. It just says, uveirachta. That is it. It is the
bread.
Classic bracha. I know Birkas HaTorah is also sort of in there, but this is very overt. Uveirachta, and it's Birkas HaMazon.
And but keep in mind, the context there is it does, in that very same chapter, the Torah speaks about, Ki lo al alechem levado,
yeah.
Not by bread alone does man live, but with all that proceeds from the mouth of God. And so bread is singled out there by the Torah as the what we call in English the staff of life, right? And it's also interesting, societies all over the world have some form of bread. Could be chapati or naan or pita or laffa, right? Or, you know, there's many, many types of incredible variety of breads around the world.
Yeah.
Right? And there's something about it. And by the way, already back in Bereshit, Genesis, When Hashem tells Adam, God tells Adam, he says, by the sweat of your brow, you shall eat bread. It's type of interesting, right? It says, this is in Bereshit, Genesis 3:19, that, you know, he's saying, because you did this sin, you now will eat bread, but by the sweat, you'll have to work for it. So it's interesting, you know, the Gemara actually says that when Hashem told Adam that from now on, you're not going to eat from the fruit of the trees anymore, you're going to eat from the grains and the grasses and the herbs of the field. So the Gemara says that Adam started crying. It's Gemara in Psachim 118. He started crying and he says, shall I and my donkey eat from the same trough? Like he says, now I've been reduced to like grazing like an animal. And Hashem said to him, no, no, no. You'll have to work hard for it. You'll have to process it. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat bread. That's when Adam is okay. It's like, ah, oh, right? Nacha daito, right? Nitkarara daito. He became comforted. So the Maharal and the Shalom and others explain that the idea is that you know, of all the foods, you know, the human being, what is the food that represents human ability, power, greatness more than any other food? It's bread. You know what I mean? The whole system of agriculture and then the harvesting and then the winnowing and the threshing and the grinding and turning into flour and then letting it ferment and become leavened bread and baking it and the whole idea of use of fire to make food. This is a exclusively human thing. It's exclusively human, right? And there is no animal that uses fire that does all the preparation. So it may be the quintessential, I love that word, the quintessential.
It is a very good word.
The quintessential, maybe La Quinta Inns could use it in their advertisements.
I'm sure they do.
La Quinta
sure
Central Hotel. Yeah.
I'm so sure they do. Yeah.
So the quintessential human food is bread. Now that represents, you know, and if you look at bread and someone shows you wheat, someone shows you bread, say, this is this.
I think Rabbi Akiva might have been involved in a conversation like that.
Awesome. Yes. That's right. That's the Tyrannus Rufus says to Rabbi Akiva, what's better, deeds of God or deeds of man? Rabbi Akiva gets a stalk of wheat and a piece of bread. He says, you tell me which is better. Now, even if you're a complete vegan, right, and you've got a naturopath, you don't eat the wheat like that, right? So what's Rabbi Akiva telling us? What's he saying with this? I think he's saying is that that obviously God could create a more perfect world, but he created a world that's designed to be perfected by the human being.
He was asking about bris milah, or he was hinting about bris milah,
yeah,
about circumcision.
Absolutely.
Baby's born, isn't he born perfect? Why does a human being, why do the Jewish people think you can make it better than God himself made it?
And that's exactly what Rabbi Akiva is responding. God created the world so we can make it better. Just like turning wheat into bread. It's quite extraordinary.
Did you ever hear that Tyrannus Rufus was a Jewish apostate? Did you ever hear anything like that?
I have not heard that.
Okay, just throwing it out there. I think I heard it one time, but I don't know if this is true. I could
look into that.
Okay.
So in any case, maybe that explains why we see a meal that doesn't have bread is not like a true meal. You're just grazing. I just, by the way, a little rant, if I may.
Yeah, please do.
I think at a lot of kiddushes and shmorgs, there should be signs that say no grazing. Meaning, take your food and leave. Back off and let other people get to, right? It's really something which I remember asking, I was at a Pesach program, one Pesach at a hotel, and I was up in the room, I was contemplating going down to Kiddush. My son Aria came into the room, I said, what's it like a Kiddush? And he said, you know, when they pushed the sacks of rice off the United Nations trucks in Somalia, the crowd around there, I said, yeah, he says, that's what it's like. So, you know, okay.
Do you know, I just, I also have a tip for kiddishes, and that is if they're serving beef jerky, do not take that beef jerky during the kiddish unless you want to just be sitting alone and not talking to anybody, because there is no way that you can talk. You have to keep on chewing with the beef jerky. It happened on our trip to India. We had beef jerky for our kiddish. Yeah, we were in
Bombay. Kerala.
Yeah, we were in Kerala for Shabbos.
What island was that? Yeah.
Yes, and amongst the Indian foods that we had were beef jerky, which was
offensive to the Indians. We had so much beef, but anyway. Yeah.
I know Mumbai, we couldn't have done it. That's but for some reason in Kerala, we're allowed to do it. But I could not talk. I didn't want to miss the opportunity of having it. So I stocked up a little bit on it. And then I realized I had to like find a quiet place where nobody would see me so that I didn't have to talk so I could eat it. So I'm just saying, if you see the beef jerky, you're not talking to anybody for the rest of the kiddush.
That's a good tip.
There you go.
So good. If you're antisocial, that's a good thing.
That is.
So basically, I think we may have, you know, we may have an idea of why bread is so important in the Torah, because it is the exclusively human food. The way it's created, the way it's made, the idea that human beings are told, by the sweat of your brow you shall have bread, that will distinguish us from the animal world. We take the world, perfect it, change it, refine it. We don't just take it as is.
Okay. Now, what about wine? Would you put wine in the same category as a drink version? Because you do need some kind of human. Mm. I mean, I guess it could. Happen by accident, but would be.
It does.
It could happen by accident, I guess.
I did read that bread. Sometimes grapes can ferment. Like if it's broken. If a grape, the skin is broken, it's on the vine, and yeast gets in, spores of yeast get in, it actually can ferment on the vine. And I think I read a phenomenon of drunk flies.
Seriously?
Yes. So
that's our second mention of flies.
That's correct.
Somebody might think this whole episode is about flies.
and actually animals in the wild can sometimes get drunk from fermented fruit.
That is, yeah. So,
a drunk elephant would be something to be avoided, I would say.
Very avoided. Yeah. Very, very avoided.
Yeah. It is type of interesting, by the way. The fly also is mentioned as one of the idols of the Canaanites.
Baal Zavuv,
Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Flies.
Which is where the book title came from.
Beelzebub.
Be exactly. Beelzebub. Worshipped by devil, satanic worshippers, etc. I remember Reb Moshe Shapiro saying something about that the fly thrives on decay, things falling apart.
Interesting.
As does the evil inclination. The good
inclination really has become. I think
unity is things coming together.
Nice. Right? That is nice.
Fly
like
is things falling apart. He pointed out something amazing. I'm sure you heard as well that the word for fly in Hebrew is zavuv. Is the letter Zayin Veit Vav Veit. Zayin Beit Vav Beit. The word for good is Tet Vav Beit. Tet is number nine.
Yeah.
Replacing
Zayin Beis.
Replacing the Tet in Tov, goodness, is Zav of the fly. Now what Moshe pointed out is the Tov appears in the Torah. The day that it doesn't appear in creation in Genesis is when there was division, when the water day. Above and below was division, second day.
Yeah. Yeah.
When does it appear twice in the Torah? On the third day when things come back together with the
nice.
Cycle.
So that's Tov. Tov is when it
things coming together. The only time it says Lotov, not good, is
when people are not together,
not to be a lot for a man, not good for a man to be alone. So he's saying Tov is things unifying to produce.
Nice.
It's
I
interesting,
like
the
that.
fly,
Yeah.
that instead of a tet, the letter tet, which is nine,
Yeah.
right, it's got zav. A zav is a man with some type of venereal disease, an
Right.
impurity that makes it prohibited for him to unite with a woman.
And it may even be an indication that he can't produce proper life-giving energy.
Correct. Exactly. So that's where the it's
I like it.
Amazing.
I like it.
Amazing.
I like it. But I just, when I was at, I was on one of my pastor's trips, and at one point we were at Qumran, and at Qumran they had these like large, you know, like almost like flags that come down. There's a word for them. These long things that come down. Anyways, it had various stages of Paleo Hebrew. So I was surprised because up until then, I thought that before Ksav Ashuris, before the Assyrian script, there was, you know, something, you know, different that we called Paleo Hebrew, the earlier Hebrew script, Ksav Ivri. Yeah, Ksav Ivri. But apparently there wasn't one stage. There were several stages. Several stages.
Yes, go on.
Several stages of Paleo Hebrew. The original ones were almost like pictograms. There you go. Like the Aleph might have looked like an ox in the beginning, and the Nun looked like a snake
backwards
or something.
Yes.
And then they sort of change as time goes on. So there were really several stages of it. And so I commented to our guide. I said, I never heard about that. And he said, there's a good exhibit about this in the Israel Museum. You should go to it. So after the tour was over, I spent, you know, like another week or so hanging out with my children and different friends and just being in the land of Israel, the Holy Land. And I took a half a day and I went to the Israel Museum and I went to that exhibit, and it was, you know, it was very informative. Right next to that exhibit was an exhibit of idols that they had found in Eretz Yisrael that date back to Canaan.
Ah.
And they had all these little, they had these little idols there. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw Baal Zavuv.
Ah.
So, I mean, it is fascinating. I mean, you hear about it, and there's this weird fascination that I think a lot of us might have because you hear about it, you want to see what the thing was that such a big deal is made out of. The thing was, it was low. The actual exhibit was lower, so I had to bend down.
Ooh, not good optics.
I had to bend down in order to see it, and then I go, what am I doing?
Well, actually, the Talmud says, the Gemara says, that one of the things that the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, looks like is the fly. Right? The Gemara in Brochus has two opinions, what it looks like, the fly. So the fly is because one aspect of the evil inclination is pirud, decomposition, things breaking apart. This, by the way, this is an amazing book. It's called Sefer HaKtav HaIvri, the Book of Hebrew, by Ada Yardeni. And it's got just like every...
Oh, look at that. Yeah.
Oh,
look
my gosh. That. It is full of... Yeah. I mean, it goes all the way to modern day fonts invented in Israel. And aspect of Hebrew. It's a phenomenal book. It's got good real estate right here. I had to stand up to get it, but nevertheless.
Okay. Right. I'm glad I gave you an opportunity to take that puppy out. Blow off some of that dust.
Getting back to...
Yeah.
The other image that the Talmud gives for the evil inclination is wheat.
Yeah. Nice.
Wheat. And it says
nice.
That the child, the it's only when the child eats wheat, can eat wheat, is capable of eating wheat, that its waste product is now considered to be, stay away from it when you're saying something of holiness, etc. Right, it's not just because of the smell,
right?
Right, I think it's because wheat may represent another aspect of the evil inclination, which is human power, right? The human, our ability, because that's a double-edged sword. our power to perfect the world is also, in some people's minds, just our power.
It was one of the, it's one of the opinions in the Gemara about what the Eitz HaDaas, the fruit of the Eitz HaDaas Tova Ra was.
Was wheat.
One opinion is that it's wheat.
Yes, exactly. Which ties into maybe a little bit of an interesting, there's a book here which I have called 6,000 Years of Bread. It's Holy and Unholy History by a fellow by the name of H.E. Jacob, who is a Holocaust survivor, who was a self-taught, he was an autodidact, I think is the term, and anthropology and history, and he wrote all about bread.
I actually, I know there's no reason for you to remember this, but I actually called you about sourdough bread, which we're going to eventually talk about, you know, being from Egypt. And you said to me, I happen to be reading a book about bread right now. That book. There it is.
Right.
There it is.
He says, he points out, you know, historically, people, most of the world were eating flatbreads and porridges. Flatbreads and porridges.
So they're getting their wheat. They're just not getting it.
That's right, exactly.
Like we do, exactly. Typically.
And he says, now, interestingly, there was barley, and there was, but there was the in Egypt, they had a four-row barley. They had something called Egyptian emmer wheat. Okay, but in any case, he says that became like the king of grains, and he says that you know, people would pray to rivers. You know what I mean? The Rhine, the Rhone, the Euphrates. There was no river that people prayed to more than the Nile, right? You know, they saw the Nile as their great father, provided this fertile silt to Egypt, interestingly, and brought life. And its waters would swell in June. Okay. And they even had a Nilometer, which was which you can
see. Seriously?
Yeah, the Egyptians had it. It was a stone post. You can still see it with marks of how high.
You actually saw it?
Yeah. So it's interesting. The Egyptians he attributes to the Egyptians the wisdom of the of bread. That is to say, porridge and flatbreads. Flatbreads and porridge remain the menu for many centuries. But he says, Pliny the Elder says, the Romans lived on porridge, not on bread. The Greeks ate their bread in a form of flat cakes. The Germans only ate groats. The Slavs had kasha, etc. The Assyrians had flat barley cakes. But the Herodotus, Greek historian, says the people who did everything in a different fashion from ordinary mortals were the Egyptians. Other peoples were afraid that their food would decay. The Egyptians set aside their dough until it decayed, and they observed with pleasure the process that took place. That was the process of fermentation. And they were actually the people who were the experts at creating bread. Creating what we call, what you know, sourdough, right? It's interesting. He says even the Egyptians, the ancient name for the black earth of Egypt was chemia. This is from Plutarch.
Oh, like chemical.
Chemia. Well, interestingly,
or alchemy
is where the Arabic word alchemia comes from.
Alchemy.
Nice. Alchemy, where chemistry comes from.
Nice.
But
nice.
Not only that, what does the Torah call the land of Egypt? One of the names for Egypt, Eretz, it's B'nai Cham.
Cham. Cham. Cham. Yeah.
Chemia.
Nice.
The black soil.
And also Lechem.
Lechem.
Lechem. Do you think it's related?
It's very possible. He claims that it is related. I cannot tell you for sure. There is in the...
Those self-taught guys, you cannot always be sure when they say something.
There is, in the etymological dictionary of the English language, they trace alchemy to the old French alchemy, from the Arabic alchimia, from the Greek chemioia, from the writings of Diocletian, all means alchemy. And maybe, it says, from the old name in Egypt, chemia, land of the black earth, found in Plutarch.
How do you like that?
So I would compare cham to chametz, the Ketava Kabbalah, the Ketava Kabbalah of Jakob Zvi Mecklenburg. He actually says that lechem comes from the word cham, which means heat, that which is warmed and heated and baked.
Oh, nice.
And but it may have multiple sources, but it's really tempting.
Now, so now that you see this information, because that was why I called you years ago. My son Moshe and I were learning about chametz and stuff, and we wanted to understand sourdough. And in that brief thing about sourdough, it mentioned Egypt. And then that's why I sort of called you, because why isn't this mentioned as one of the reasons that we eat matzah?
It's an interesting question, because there's two distinct issues. You could avoid chametz the entire Pesach and also not eat matzah. There's a mitzvah to eat matzah. The mitzvah to eat matzah is related to the food that we ate as slaves and to the coming out of Egypt in Arash and so on and so forth. It's the prohibition of chametz is like an independent idea. And the prohibition of chametz is almost like leavened bread represents Egyptian culture. Stay away from it.
Yeah, so why don't they say that? They never say it.
Well, who's they?
They would be Rishon or Achron that has been...
I feel authorized.
But I'm saying, before you. I mean, there aren't... And by the way, you could have Chag HaPesach and Chag HaMatzos. You've got both of them. Chag HaPesach, you're shechting, you're slaughtering the lamb. Part of the message that's being sent is you're slaughtering the gods of Egypt. You are, and when you put the blood on the doorpost and you leave, you're leaving the culture, the gods of Egypt, the Egyptian culture behind. Mm. And you're not eating chametz, you're only eating matzah. So in that way, you're denying that aspect of Egyptian culture. Somebody would have wanted to say something like that, you would think.
I think the Zohar says something like that. I haven't seen a lot of it in other sources, but it's interesting. This is John Cooper, who's a historian from Oxford, has a book called Eat and Be Satisfied, which is a history of Jewish food. In the introduction, he calls the Jews a gastrocentric people.
Well, my center has been definitely affected by our
and he says
love
that
for food.
The Israelites probably learned the trick of preparing leaven from the Egyptians. The substance called seor was probably flour diluted with water left to go sour. Pliny assures us that all means employed by the ancients to render bread savory and light, this is the most simple and easy. Noam Jasny that little, if any, bread was leavened in Italy and in Greece when the Christian era started. The leavening process was something that was really heavily associated with Egypt. And you know, it's type of interesting. It could very well be that maybe the fact that we stay so far away from chametz, you can't have it in the house, you can't own
yes.
it, you can't get benefit, right? You're not supposed to, there's the vast majority of our offerings in the temple were not supposed to be chametz.
Yes.
There are only two, which, right? So it is type of interesting, right? The stack that we stay away from chametz, maybe that's it. You know, there's a beautiful line.
But it would be so, that is something that would be so low-hanging fruit to talk about.
I don't know why, but we have
Lora Isi Ein Oraya.
First, folks, you heard it first here.
Yes, Mordechai wants to take credit. I'm going to give him the credit.
I said
for
us.
No, you could take
it. It's interesting. In his 6,000 years of bread, One of the things he points out is that the word taxation was not something in Egypt. What the way you paid for your existence was primarily through forced labor. Forced labor, that was the primary way. The tax rate basically was based on the size of your harvest, how much you'd have to work, how much you'd have to give. It says the grain was given into Pharaoh's treasury, and Pharaoh would give out bread to people.
This was by Yosef or just always?
It sounds like him always. Uh-huh. But he says every Egyptian lived in dependence upon the king, who had to give life to every Egyptian. This fact was so obvious to all that no one felt spiritually oppressed by his serfdom. Personal freedom had not yet been discovered. Personal lack of freedom, on the other hand, freed each individual from worry about his food. You know, when you read what the Jews complained about when they were in the desert, we remembered that we ate everything for free in Egypt.
Yeah.
We were given stuff, right? Yeah. But the price of being given food is that you're a slave. You don't have personal freedom.
But he's suggesting that that wasn't something humans knew about.
He's saying it didn't
freedom, see- the value of freedom, they just saw being held as a servant. They saw that as
That's
a step
normal.
Up. It's like a government job. You hear people talk about government jobs
That's
like
normal.
That.
Normal.
Yeah. Hey, I got a government job. I'm set.
It's like
for
that,
life.
Like that old Greek, it was a Greek joke, I think it is. Old Greek joke about this fish. I think we may have mentioned it once before. This elderly.
Probably when you were in Greece.
Elderly fish who had been actually out, he'd been actually fished by fishermen. He was out of the water twice, three times, and was able to wiggle his way off the boat back into the sea. So everyone, he had scars all over him. He was very well respected.
They had street cred.
He's swimming in the water, and there's two young fish swimming towards him in the ocean. And the old fish says, "Morning, boys." And they say, "Morning, sir." He says, "How's the water today, huh?" And he swims on, and one of the young fish, one says to the other, he says, "What the hell is water?" You know.
Yes, you take it. It's like air, I guess.
That's
you
it.
take
you're,
it for granted.
Yeah, yeah, you know, what's water?
Yeah.
He knew what it was. He'd been out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So sometimes you've got to be out in order to know.
But then that makes, here's another thing. We are just going from one to another, because then the notion of how problematic slavery is would have to have been taught to people. In other words, the lack of pain and suffering that comes from being given, you know, terrible amounts of work, avodas perach or something, that I think everybody could understand. But yes, the notion of freedom, it could be we sometimes ask, they just traded one form of slavery for another. They were slaves in Egypt. Now they're slaves to Hashem. Hashem says it overtly several times in the Torah that that's what happened. So in a way, we hardly benefited. You know, that's an initial question before you explain, give the answer. But it could be that they never even knew about the concept of freedom as a concept. They obviously, there are some people that weren't slaves, but they didn't know it was something to aspire to. Like in America, it's one of the great aspirations, freedom.
Sure.
And they may not have even had that. That's awesome. That is an awesome thing to consider.
And this guy points out, Jacob, that bread was more than just Egypt's principal food. It was like, it was almost like a cultural unit and a unit of measure. You know, you'd count wealth by the number of breads, right? You know, the flour baked in the oven was almost like a currency. It's just like fascinating. There's great Egyptian paintings of tomb paintings of baking of bread by the Egyptians. You know, it's but yeah, In the Book of the Dead, I am a man who has bread in Heliopolis. My bread is in heaven with the sun god. My bread is on earth with Keb. The bark of evening of morning brings me the bread that is my mess from the house of the sun god. All right. It very much. And Hashem is interesting because we now, instead of having bread for free, we got bread for free for a while with the man.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Mon, you're going to have to talk about that, how Mon is bred in a minute. But go ahead. Yeah.
But Hashem was wanted to wean us away from that. We were coming to Israel and he was saying the ideal is not Mon. Mon is not the ideal. The ideal is to plant and to harvest and to bake bread and to work. That's the ideal, right? So to some degree, to seek as an ideal, living off, we say in benching, in our grace after meals, one of the things we say is, don't bring us to matnat basar vadam. I don't want to live on the gifts of people, right? Yeah. We want to live, right, from Hashem, and we want to earn our keep. And of course, the whole of Judaism is based on the idea that humanity is created in a free will system so that we can earn our goodness, earn our keep, not just have a handout, not just have social welfare, etc.
But so two things are coming to mind. One of them is, because I had been thinking about this earlier, do we have to then understand that Mon works like wheat? In other words, that it is leavened?
Hard to know, because the word lechem can apply also to unleavened bread.
Yes, that's
we
true.
We make the blessing on
lachme, yes.
Lechem in Aretz.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
Right. So it could
it doesn't have to be. Yeah.
So it's not, that's not.
So one other thing there's this, I had mentioned to you this earlier before we got on about there's a TED talk called The Making of Bread or The History of Bread with this guy, Peter Reinhardt. So I think he makes this awesome comparison between the making of bread and God's original making of the human, that the human is it's earth and water, you know, mixed together. It's clay. And then the breath of life is poured into him. V'yipach ba'apav nishmas chaim. So, and he was saying that when you put when the reason that yeast, it's called a leavening agent, it originally comes from that word to enliven, to bring something to life. So when you have a dough, you initially have this dough, and then you add the yeast element, you are mimicking Hashem breathing into the nostrils of this clay, the breath of life. That's what he wanted to suggest.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. You know, bread has so much symbolism in it as well. You know, interesting, Rabbeinu Bachai in Kad HaKemach points out, you know, yes, we hold the bread with our 10 fingers when we make a blessing. The word, the blessing over bread has got 10 words.
Yes, you use it to count. You could use it to count for a minion.
Yes. I usually use to be or not to be. That is the question. Which people
makes perfect sense for doing it.
Right. But he says, why 10? Because there's 10 mitzvot.
Nice. I'm going to do
regarding
that.
Bread. There's don't plow with the ox and the donkey together.
Yeah.
Don't mix the seeds.
Yeah.
There's leket, shikha, and peah. Leave the corner of the field. Don't collect the sheaves that you forgot. Don't collect the stuff, the gleanings. Like shikha, nice. Peah. There is truma, which is given to the kohen. There's
nice.
Maaser rishon, given to the levi.
Nice.
There's Maaser sheni, which is taken to Yerushalayim and eaten. There is
nice.
Maaser oni, which is given to the poor, and there's challah
nice.
From the dough. So there's
nice.
And when you, it just, I was just thinking of that when you said it's almost like a human creating a human. It's like the human's got 10, the 10, you know, the
10. Yeah.
like the Ten Commandments we spoke about a while
Nice.
back. Of course, we have 613,
Right.
but I'm saying the Ten,
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
and then you've got the Ten Commandments of bread. So very interesting.
Also, just a related thing, but it's not 10, it's 11. The first 11 steps of the 39 forbidden melachos, creative work on Shabbos, are sometimes described as the order of making bread.
The Dura de Pass, yeah, the order
Siddur
of making
pas.
bread.
Yeah. So that, and that would be a big chunk of the creative work that we are refraining from when we make Shabbos.
So I guess when it comes to Pesach, one of the things we should bear in mind is the freedom from the slavery that was our freedom was type of bought from us by Pharaoh by providing us food, bread, etc. And people were willing to, they didn't even have a concept, maybe, or they were willing to give it up so they have the free bread, as people do. There are people who are willing to do that. You know what I mean?
Give up their freedom for bread.
Give up that. People still do that. They'll give up their freedom because, they want the steady income, and it's always a bit of a challenge. And so, obviously, we didn't get into it, one could probably think of the fact that one of the terms used for receiving something without earning it, which is the whole idea of creation, some say, is called Nahama de Kisufa, bread of shame. That the human being does not want to receive bread of shame. It's like bread is the term used, not just the gift of shame, but bread of shame.
Now, there is some, I think, one of the indications that you're approaching the time of Mashiach is that bread will grow on trees. So that would imply we have to look into that because that would be problematic. We'd always want to have
Well,
to
no,
make bread.
because bread started off the Gemara, which says that one of the various opinions what the fruit of Adam and Eve ate
Right.
was either etrog, which is why we do a mitzvah with it,
Right.
or it was figs, which is why they use the fig leaves to cover themselves,
Could have
or
been
it was
wine.
grape juice, which is wine, right? Wine.
Yeah.
So that's why we do mitzvahs with wine. One opinion is that it was wheat. And the
Yeah.
Gemara says, well, what are you talking about? It says they ate from a tree, a fruit tree.
Right.
The Gemara says at that time, wheat grew on trees. Now, the difference between fruit and wheat is that fruit almost always can just be taken and eaten. There's no preparation necessary. You may have to peel it, cut it,
Right. Right.
but pretty much it's edible as is. So at
Right.
that time, pre-sin, so to speak, wheat or bread was edible as is. You could pull it off the tree.
But wouldn't you want that human component, the partnership with Hashem, the fact that we're doing it?
In Messianic times, that will be primarily in a more spiritual area. In other words, we still will perfect ourselves, but the perfection will be in very lofty spiritual areas, not in something as pathetic as food. So there we want it to.
Spoken. I just wish people could have just a short video of you in different places where delicious food is available.
I do appreciate
I
delicious
want this
food,
way.
as
If
you
at
can
all
see.
possible, I would like that audio over just like a 30-second video
Of me at
of
a
you.
smorg, me at a.
Different countries of the world sampling their delicious gastronomic offerings. Nothing is base and lowly as food. Yeah, go ahead.
But you are correct. But in messianic times, we can
Yeah.
take all that energy, and instead of directing it at the
I
creation
hear.
of food, we direct it
Right.
at the perfection of self.
For most people, that's essentially what happens now. We buy our bread on a shelf. I mean, it's basically grows on trees. Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
There is a breadfruit which grows in the
I
Pacific.
heard it's not that
I
delicious.
haven't tried
You
it.
have to, I heard you have to develop a kind of
We have not done a tour of
liking for
New
it.
Guinea. I have not done a tour of New Guinea as
I
yet.
wouldn't jump into it. If you ever get to New Guinea, don't take a big chunk. Just try it a little bit first before you jump into it. That's
Had
what I
one
was
student
told.
who lived in New Guinea for a year, 2 years
Seriously?
at Yeshiva University. Yeah, he's actually right now living in Singapore. Family lives in Singapore, but he lived in New Guinea for his
And
father
did he
started a career there.
extol the breadfruit?
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, okay. So I hope everyone has a wonderful Pesach. If you're seeing this before Pesach, if you're seeing this after,
Right.
I hope you had a wonderful Pesach.
Right.
And a little bit about bread from us.
Right.
Go get
And
that bread.
if you do watch it before Pesach, make sure to put it away somewhere or sell it before Pesach. You do not want to watch this or listen to this on Pesach, do they? I don't know.
I don't know. I once gave just because I was in a mood at
Yeah.
one of the Pesach programs. I gave a class about the kashrus of whiskey.
Now that I imagine got a lot of people paying attention.
It
There's a
did.
lot of people that regularly would not pay attention to one, but that one, I think
I was
you.
just feeling a little cruel, but I felt that I should.
I'm sure they had sorghum whiskey. We had a
No,
wine tasting like two
at that
years
time
ago,
didn't exist.
and the guy came with sorghum whiskey,
Yeah.
$100 a bottle.
I don't know how good that is. I'd be interested in trying it, but you never know. Anyway, please, folks,
Okay.
if you enjoyed this, share it with others. So it'll be more than the, about minion of people who watch this, the 10 or 15.
There's never really 10 at the same time, though, so I don't think you
That's
can call
right.
it a minion.
Although
Can't call it a
I
minion.
did speak to some guy from Lakewood Yeshiva,
Yeah.
who told me that he enjoys the podcast and many of his friends do. I said, really, a lot of them? He says, yeah. He says, we don't actually, just one person who has internet access downloads it, and then he shares it with everyone else somehow.
Oh, so you think they might be listening in a group and they say Kaddish afterwards?
Well, I don't, yeah, maybe Kaddish on it. I don't know, but yeah, they maybe. So anyway, share, like, tell people about it and enjoy. Thank you very much for watching,
All right.
folks, and for
Be
listening.
well. Yeah. Thank you.
Right.
Be
Yeah.
well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.